Hello, 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 and welcome to the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. I am the managing editor of Movies.com, and this is a special podcast. It's going to run from now-ish through the end of August, we'll say Labor Day weekend, and it's going to cover summer movies. We're not just talking about summer movies that are coming out every weekend in theaters, but we're talking about summer movies of old, summer movies I grew up with, and also the summer movies that are coming out in years from now, because we do know which summer movies are coming out, 2015, 2016, and we're going to talk about one of those movies coming out in 2016 at the top of the show. But first, let me welcome in a man that I hope will join me for every episode of this special Summer Movies Podcast. This is a really fun one. His name is Sean O'Connell. He is the movies content director at CinemaBlend.com. And Sean, I am so happy that you agreed to go on this adventure with me, because I love summer movies so much. The ones I grew up with were so influential to me when I was a kid, and I'm excited to do a podcast that's just about summer movies, and also a podcast that has an end date at the end of August.
Stretch to infinity.
But I'm excited.
Well, because I think a lot of people hold off for when they – like the people who go see two or three movies a year – you know, they're going to skip the January, February, March type movies unless it's something that really catches their eye, because they're waiting for the spectacle of the summer blockbuster season. There's a reason that the studios do so much better from May through August. People are off. They want to get into the air conditioning, all of those things. But I think they've just been groomed to look out for the big budget special effects, the pop culture characters that we love seeing on the big screen. It's part of the reason why the president of Disney was talking recently about, you know, Star Wars is going to come out in December, but he's doing everything in his power to angle back to those May releases, because, you know, it just feels like the big events happen in the summertime. So for us to have a podcast that focuses primarily on those films and the importance of those films and what they mean to us, it just makes all the sense in the world.
It does make a lot of sense. And you know what? We're going to talk – all of those things we're going to cover on this I guess, first episode, although the Spider-Man episode that we did last week counts as part of this Summer Movies Podcast. This is really our first coming out official episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to cover a little bit of everything. We're going to cover movies that are coming out in the future – over the summer. We're going to cover movies now. We're going to talk briefly about Neighbors. Sean and I have also seen Godzilla. Sean has seen X-Men Days of Future Past. We're going to tease our thoughts on both of those movies before talking about them at length later on this month. And then we're going to talk about our favorite summer movie comedies that we grew up with. Which comedies, you know, Neighbors made such an impact at the box office this past weekend. What are our favorite summer movie comedies? If somebody's jonesing to laugh, what do we suggest they go back to? Let's start off May 6th, 2016. Zack Snyder's Man of Steel 2, a.k.a. Batman vs. Superman, will arrive in theaters, at least domestically in U.S. theaters. And the first image of Ben Affleck in that Batman suit has been released. Zack Snyder tweeted it a little while ago. Yesterday, he tweeted a picture of the Batmobile from, like, the back end of it. I guess you could say it's ass. He tweeted an ass shot of the Batmobile. But you know what? We're posting this today. It's impossible to not start off the episode just talking about this summer movie and what we thought about that image. Let's get some brief thoughts from you, Sean.
I wish it was in a little bit of color because I'm doing a piece for Cinema Blend. It's on the evolution of the Batman suits. And in looking at all of them one after the other after the other, there have been tweaks and modifications. And, of course, when you get to Batman and Robin, there was like drastic overhauls that included nipples and neon. But they've all sort of looked the same. They've had that sort of military armor look that definitely was informed in Batman Begins. The Nolan films obviously have a little bit more streamlined look to them. They look more like a suit. I always thought Michael Keaton looked like he was wearing like a refrigerator box. And there's nothing in this one that really says to me that Ben Affleck's wearing anything really different. And the color scheme of this picture looks so gray. You and I were talking before we got on that I was really hoping for a light gray with the light blue, you know, not this dark, not this dreary. And I don't want to use dark and dreary for this picture because it puts a different sort of connotation on it, or it automatically assumes something. But it does look like a sullen, sort of somber Batman.
I think it is. I think there's a reason why that's the first picture. You know, everything that we've been hearing about this Batman before this is that he's older, he's wiser, he's weathered. You know, this Batman doesn't look like he wants to be Batman, in right. my opinion. I look at this picture, I see a guy that's like, oh, I got to put on this suit, I got to go be Batman. Right. And that's what I see, and that excites me. I'm not complaining about that. I'm not like, oh, I want to see a Batman that's smiling as he you know swings into action. No, I like that. I think we've been inundated with Christopher Nolan's Batman, and we know sort of he's ingrained in our skull now after three very successful movies, and now we need something different. We need a Batman that really throws us off course, and I like a Batman that is a little sad.
The one thing that jumps out to me too, when Frank Miller drew Batman, he always put like this comically big bat signal on his chest. And that's there. Like if you zoom in on this one, that is a huge, fat, out of proportion bat symbol on his chest, which again is another nod to the Miller design. And they keep saying that they want to do, you know, very similar to the Frank Miller graphic novels for this, or to at least have them inform some of the decisions in this. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of blue in that cape and cowl, because that's, again, part of what Miller designed. But, you know, you see it all there. You see the gloves, you see the cape, you see the big bat symbol on his chest. It's you look at the picture and you think, yeah, that's Batman, all right.
It is Batman. I also think the Batmobile looks a little bit more like from the Tim Burton movies, sleeker, yeah. sexier, not as sort of military combat vehicle like the Tumbler did from the Nolan films, which I'm okay with because I like a sleek, sexy Batmobile. I don't know. Call me crazy. I just like, you know, you could see the high ass on it and I could just see these giant fumes blowing out of it as he takes off and, you know, sliding in and out of that. And that's what I really liked. You know, they say what they want about the Burton movies and the Schumacher movies, but I always liked their Batmobiles. I remember at Comic-Con, what was it, 2 years ago? They had them all lined up outside.
Yeah.
That was just – I spent so much time there. It was just so cool looking at him.
I mean I'm also partial to the Adam West one. It kind of just looks like a convertible that he's pimp riding around into. That was pretty awesome also, but I guess you can't go that far back.
But, yeah, that is the first picture. When we're going to get more, we don't know. We were talking before we came on whether or not Warner Brothers is going to do something at Comic-Con San Diego. Zack Snyder, of course, announced this film last year at San Diego Comic-Con. So you would think that he would show up. You know, I know that he's done photo shoots with all of them in costumes, including Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and Henry Cavill as Superman. I know he has shots of all three of them together. I could see that if they don't have enough footage to show at Comic-Con, he's going to at least walk on stage after the Hobbit presentation and be like, all right, I'll give you guys some pictures of them in costumes. I mean, come on, right?
Well, Legendary and Warner Brothers teased Godzilla for 2 years with a sizzle reel, you know, and now we're getting Godzilla this summer. And so it makes sense that they would start at least laying the groundwork for the promotional campaign for this movie. Get fans whooped up.
I say get fans whooped up. But we'll see. The picture is in black and white. There isn't a lot of color there. So maybe he is hiding some of the colors that Sean wants to see so badly. But we'll see. I'm excited to see what comes next. But moving on to movies that aren't coming out 2 years from now. Let's talk about Neighbors. Is Neighbors the comedy of the summer? I already think it is. I want to see what you think. But I already think Neighbors is not only the comedy to beat this summer, but I think when we're sitting here recapping the summer movies that came out at the end of August, I think Neighbors, and I called it Neighborhood, by the way, three times.
You do love saying
while I was talking to Sean before we came on. But I think Neighbors is going to be is already the comedy of the summer.
Well, let's see what it's going to go up against. It would have to beat 22 Jump Street. It would have to beat A Million Ways to Die in the West. What are some other comedies that are coming? Is there another big comedy in July?
I think Tammy. Melissa McCarthy's Tammy. I think those are the three really raunchy R-rated comedies. I mean, you have Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore's Blended, which is more of a family comedy. But if you're talking about the R-rated comedies, and those are usually the comedies of the summer, the big R-rated comedies, at least these days.
I have hope for Jump Street. I think that with Lord and Miller directing it, they're very self-aware of the fact that they are making a sequel. And I think they're going to get a lot of meta jokes into that. But, you know, you do come back with the whole it's been there, done that sort of thing. And Neighbors is playing off of, not that it's a completely fresh premise, but it's new characters and new setups.
Yeah.
And it got off to such a fast start. I mean, I'm really impressed with what it did initially to knock Spider-Man off in its second weekend, to dominate the way that it did with it, having an R rating, sort of proving that R-rated comedies, you know, people will show up to them as long as they're funny. It's one of these ones, too, that's just infinitely quotable. You know, like people are going to be talking about Neighbors jokes for the duration of the summer, and it's going to take something really big to knock it off. So I don't necessarily want to come out and say that it's the comedy of the summer, but you're right. When you're talking about what's coming, it has a very good chance to hold on to that mantle.
Yeah, I mean, because if you look at it, like you said, 22 Jump Street, hey, I'm really looking forward to it. I think I'm going to laugh my ass off because I did for the first one.
Yeah.
But it is going up against the first one, you know, and so you're automatically comparing it to that. A Million Ways to Die in the West – you know, Seth MacFarlane's a really funny guy. I'm in his corner. I'm in that camp of people that really like it. I grew up watching Family Guy, always liked it.
Yeah.
I know his humor rubs some people the wrong way. Not me. I enjoy it. However, I don't know if Seth MacFarlane's stuff is going to work when it's Seth MacFarlane in the flesh delivering it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It works when he's behind his characters of Family Guy. It worked like gangbusters for Ted because he was a teddy bear, and it was really funny hearing that stuff come out of a teddy bear's mouth. But when it's coming out of Seth MacFarlane in the flesh, when it's coming out of his mouth, is it going to work as well? That's the wild card with that one. I don't know.
What about Sex Tape?
Sex Tape, you know what? Sex Tape looks humorous. I love Jason Segel. I think Cameron Diaz does some really good comedy, especially when it's R-rated. I think she does a good job. But it does look sort of one note. It does sort of look like a one-joke movie where, yeah, you know, the sex tape gets out somehow, and now it's out. And that's the joke. It's out.
Well, to be fair, Neighbors on paper is a one-joke comedy, you know?
That's
so
true.
That's a really good way to mine other humor out of it.
That's true.
And part of it is, and I think what Neighbors did right is they hired a ton of funny people in support. When you talk to me about Seth MacFarlane's movie, he's got great actors like Liam Neeson and Charlize Theron, but I don't know if they're funny, you know? Like, you could hand off a joke to somebody in Neighbors and they were going to usually hit a triple or a home run. I'm not sure if MacFarlane has that. He's handing things off to Neil Patrick Harris, and Sarah Silverman's fine. I mean, there's potential there, but
we'll have to see. You know, I mean, it's not that I'm not looking forward to any of these movies. I'm just saying I'm looking at, on paper, I'm looking at all of them, and I'm seeing Neighbors is going to be tough to beat.
Will laugh harder at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles than we do at any of these movies.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
I cannot wait. Yeah. I can't wait until we get to late July, early August, because we got some crazy ones coming. Jupiter Ascending, Guardians of the Galaxy. But we'll get there.
Yes.
Let's talk Godzilla.
Oh, yes. Controversial Godzilla.
We've both seen Godzilla. We're not going to go into great length in spoiler territory because I want to do that next week.
We saw it together, too, we should point out.
We did. We sat next to each other. We held hands the whole time.
It's just rare that we're in the same city and get to see a movie together.
It does. It was really cool. You came in like right at the last minute and like you came down, you hugged me, and I was just like, yeah, I get to sit next to Sean. We get to watch this together, and we watched it.
And then –
you know
Well, go ahead. You go first, and then I'll sort of clean up.
I dug it. You know, I dug it. But it wasn't what I expected. And okay, I think because the last couple of summers, at least, you know, when we've seen some monster movies, I'm expecting something else. I guess I expected more of the monsters.
Right.
You know, and it's hard. I don't want to talk about this movie without. I want to try to talk about it without spoiling it because we're going to spoil the hell out of it next week. But.
Okay.
You know, I think that as a Godzilla movie, like if you're familiar with the movies of Godzilla that have come out previously, I think it's a great homage to that. I also think it's a fun little homage to Roland Emmerich's Godzilla movie. I think without the camp, I think but there's definitely some elements of that movie in there.
Right.
And I think the effects are great. I think some of the shot selection is beautiful. There are some of the more beautiful shots I've seen in a long time, in one of these giant effects-driven blockbusters. They really let Gareth Edwards, who directed this, have some fun in his shot selection in terms of seeing POVs that we usually don't see in these kinds of movies. And so I really like that about it. I thought the characters were a little thin.
Yes.
And it was hard for me to invest in their story a little bit. But I liked, you know, the last 30 minutes took my breath away. I loved it. I thought it was really, really good. So definitely an interesting movie, and I think we'll get into it more next week. But overall, I dug it. Overall, I think it's worth seeing, especially if you're a monster movie fan, and especially if you're a Godzilla fan, you should go see it.
Well, yeah, that's the interesting thing. Is so many of these movies that we're going to talk about this summer, they're franchises that come with their built-in audiences. And so they're working to sort of satisfy those people. And we talked about that a bit with Spider-Man. You know, if you're a Spider-Man fan, you probably wanted to see the Gwen Stacy saga play out. If you're a Godzilla fan, there's probably a lot of things that you're looking for in this movie that you're going to get, and that might be enough. It might make you really happy that you got to see him fighting giant creatures in the middle of a city, and there's one fantastic scene with the way he uses one of his powers to eliminate one of his villains. And I can imagine if you're in a crowd with Godzilla fans, they're going to lose their minds at that. And yeah, the funny thing is, I think that the movie has a really good opening. A lot of it's structured around Bryan Cranston.
Great opening.
Yeah, and it has a great end. Like you said, the final 30 minutes, which is when you get to the most of the monster action, is extremely memorable, and those are the scenes I'm gonna still hold on to, you know, a year from now when Godzilla's faded away. But I had a lot of problems with the middle section, which to me just felt like a lot of treading water. And it was Gareth Edwards trying out not only a lot of different tones, but a number of different little story points that maybe they're important to Godzilla people, but I could never figure out how they fit together in this movie that we're trying to be – that we're trying to the story that they're trying to tell. The central character is Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and he makes so many different moves in this film that he's not a believable character at all. Like, they need him to be in every sequence, but that's not believable. And some characters come and go. Some characters exist in the film, but I still don't really know what they're doing. Like, they're just there for exposition, and most of the women in the cast have nothing to do. So there's big problems in the middle of it, and I think people are leaving on a high because the end, the big battle sequences at the end are great, and you leave it like, wow, that really was great. But then when you start to reflect on it, you're like, oh, but there's so much where we just sort of waited around for something to happen. And, you know, I've heard some people praise the fact that you don't see the monster that often. I thought that it needed more Godzilla. There's a couple of big moments where it looked like Godzilla was going to throw down and start beating some ass. And then the movie cuts away. And I was like, what happened? Where did that go? So it always felt sort of disjointed to me.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it more next week and spoil it to no end. Let's talk briefly about X-Men Days of Future Past. I have not seen it yet, but you have, so I'd love to hear your non-spoilerish thoughts. Keep in mind, this doesn't come out until May 23rd. Godzilla, by the way, comes out this weekend, May 16th, right? That's where we are.
Yeah.
X-Men Days of Future Past. They're calling this the Avengers of X-Men movies. Is it the Avengers of X-Men movies? Is it as good as the Avengers?
Right.
Where does it line up? Where does it stack up with
That's a terrible X-Men comparison. That's just a terrible comparison.
Why is it terrible? It's like all the X-Men.
It is all the X-Men, and it's just different because it does something even more remarkable than the Avengers in the fact that – although I guess Avengers connected all these little standalone guys who had their own movies. It's the way that Bryan Singer connects his initial X-Men – the first two films, I don't even want to say trilogy, although a lot of those characters bled over into Last Stand. It's the way that he connects them to the first class people, and it works so seamlessly that you'd almost believe that, like, back in 1999, 2000, that they said, when we get to 2014, we're going to do Days of Future Past, but we're going to have all of these other films that took place in between, and it's going to allow us to do it. Like, somehow, very slyly, Fox was laying a ton of groundwork by introducing all of these characters so that when they got to this story, it was like, oh my gosh, we actually can do it now. And it's so much fun to see it play out. They have a bright shining star in Hugh Jackman, who I think gets to be – it's the best interpretation of Wolverine because he's as much of a scene stealer as he was in the first one, where he's just this arrogant, cocky, you know, son of a bitch. But he doesn't have to be, you know, carrying the whole load like he is in his standalone films. And he just gets to be part of an ensemble and be the coolest guy in the room and steal scenes. And Singer just reminds you, without spoiling anything, that he knows how these characters and their powers should work on screen. You open in a desolate future, the post-apocalyptic future that the X-Men are going to have to try and prevent. You get a lot of scenes of the X-Men fighting these Sentinel robots, and they're just there to let people like Iceman and Blink and Bishop and Kitty Pryde and all these great characters, you know, show their powers, use their powers. And then it settles into its story. And then it hands the baton to the first class actors. And you have people like McAvoy and Fassbender and Jennifer Lawrence. And they're all – Nicholas Holt. They're all so good at what they're doing. I love the first class ensemble, and they really get a chance to shine here. They get to mix it up with Jackman as Wolverine. The Sentinels are amazing. Bolivar Trask is a great villain. It has memorable action sequences, big action sequences. I mean, to me, clearly I'm saying what I've said in my review. It's the best X-Men movie I think that we've seen yet. And it's amazing that all of these pieces existed so that Singer could sort of step in and be like, oh, good, I can take this from over here and this from over here, and I'm going to put this together, and here we go. This is the story the fans have been waiting for, and it plays beautifully.
See, I think that's great. I'm trying to think off the top of my head as you were talking is what other movies had characters from a previous – a trilogy, as well as a new rebirth trilogy, I guess you could say. Like, what other franchise has mixed and matched like that?
I can't think of one.
Because it's impressive. And the fact that they pulled it off, from what you're saying, that's great. Awesome. Well,
and I think they were lucky. Because it wasn't a master plan, but the fact is they have all these pieces in place and could use them. Sounds like Terminator wants to do that.
Yeah, it does sound like they want to do this. It sounds like they want to do that, yeah. And so we'll have to see. And I think that's kind of how these franchises are going to evolve now, ones that they want to reboot with actors or actresses from the first one that are still around and can still kind of participate. I mean, we're going to see that with Episode 7, Star Wars.
Well, and Star Trek kind of did it.
With Leonard Nimoy a little bit, yeah.
So that's sort of in play. But even still, it's the fact that they have Jackman consistently through all of them. So that's always sort of root of the universe. And they figured – you know, like some people were bitching, oh, it should – Kitty Pryde's the one who went back in the comic books and it shouldn't be Wolverine. But they explain why it should be, and it makes total sense. And from a business standpoint, it makes sense to have Jackman as the lead of this movie.
Of course.
Because he's so charismatic, and he's such a big, big action star. And the new additions, like Quicksilver, is tremendous. Like, I thought Quicksilver was going to be the cheesiest character in the X-Men universe. He's amazing.
Puts a lot of pressure on Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who's playing the same character in the Avengers sequel.
Well, they have a reason to use him in this story, and it's great. And then he gets like one amazing scene, which we can talk about in spoiler territory next week, that just blew me away. Like, he's such a fun character. It turns out to be a great character and a really great effect.
Awesome. So Sean calls it the best X-Men movie that they have made so far, and that's some big words there.
I think my favorite one prior to that was the initial one, which I still think was a great, fun X-Men debut. I like X2 also, and I love First Class, but this one to me just seems to have all of the right elements.
Rock on. So let's end this podcast by going back. You know, we talked about Neighbors. We talked about whether or not it is the comedy of summer. I definitely think it's the comedy to beat this summer. But what other comedies, what other summer comedies, let's talk about comedies that came out during the summer, that are memorable to us, our favorite summer movie comedies? Sean?
When I think of summer movies, this was a fun question to think about. I think of Bill Murray. And I wanted to go with Ghostbusters, but I'm going back even further, and I'm picking Meatballs.
Oh, Meatballs.
Because people talked about like the way, way back, and it was really fun. It was a fun summer comedy. It took place in the summer. It took place at a water park, which says summer. And I think that people were tapping into the vibe that Bill Murray always sort of has, which is this laid-back, hey, school's out. Come hang out with me. I'm the class clown. And Meatballs just perfected that. You know, it was the kids going away to camp back when kids used to go to camp. And maybe they still do. I'm not sure. My kids don't. And it just had that sort of fun vibe. Like it spoke to kids of that age. You could point to Murray and Ghostbusters, which is just a seminal comedy. But I'm going to pick Meatballs because it just feels like summer to me. It reminds me of summer. And when I watch it, I could watch it in December and I would think that it's 90 degrees outside and I want to just go to a camp and participate in some of the fun hijinks that they did in Meatballs.
That's like Wet Hot American Summer.
Yes.
2001. That was one of my picks.
Nice.
That kind of lampoons the whole summer camp movie, but in such an awesome, awesome way. And this is a movie that starred a lot of people before they really kind of took off. Paul Rudd, Bradley Cooper, Amy Poehler, Janine Garofalo, we've known. But this movie has so many funny moments in it. That I just kind of lost it. And the fact that everybody is in character the entire time, nobody's stepping out and kind of looking at all these other people and saying, why are they doing that? Everybody just goes full out for it, and it's silly, and it's stupid, and it's awesome, and it just pays homage to a lot of movies that have come before it, like Meatballs, and I just love the hell out of it. Also, I have to mention There's Something About Mary.
I was going to say that too. Good. I'm so glad you picked that.
Yeah. You know, this is a movie, and it's hard. And I'm curious to see what Dumb and Dumber 2. I'm curious to see what those boys do with the Farley brothers, what they do with Dumb and Dumber 2. But, you know, when There's Something About Mary came out, it just blew my mind in terms of R-rated comedy. You know, and we're in an age right now where R-rated comedy really is the comedy to beat at the box office, at least.
Right.
I think all of the big comedies this summer that do well at the box office are all going to be R-rated. Yeah. But the Farley brothers, and it's not to say there weren't R-rated comedies before them, but There's Something About Mary, I felt like it changed things.
Yeah.
And it changed comedy in a lot of different ways. And there are just some scenes in that, when I saw them for the first time, I lost it. I just lost it. And it's like – one of the comedies where seeing it for the first time, I laughed the hardest I had ever laughed. There's so many great scenes in it. And we talked about Cameron Diaz earlier on whether or not she can play comedy. She's great in the movie. Well, and I think she can.
It was one of those huge word of mouth ones too. Like, you heard from so many people that you have to go see There's Something About Mary. And I don't know when's the last time we've had a comedy that's really made the rounds like that, where people are just, you've sent so many friends to go see. Maybe for me, the last one was probably Tropic Thunder, where I kept saying to people, no, you have to give it a chance, go see it in the theater. It's that funny. Neighbors feels a little bit like that. It's close to it.
It does. It does. Neighbors is a movie that you're telling your friends, and they're like, "This is Zac Efron movie." Zac, you're like, "No, go see it."
God, Zac Efron's funny.
It's really funny, and what I liked about Neighbors too is that it appeals not only to like the frat bros, but also to the suburbanites,
yeah,
who are living in the suburbs and kind of can barely remember their frat days. And then also, you know, one thing they don't talk about is how awesome Rose Byrne is in it. And so you have this really great female performance. Talk about a movie where they give the female lead tons to do.
Yeah.
She steals scenes from Rogen and Efron left and right. And so it just appeals to so many people. It's such a smart comedy. It's well done. I'm really happy for the director, Nicholas Stoller, because I think he's really talented, and he's done a lot of great stuff over the years. And we just come back to Neighbors. It's I think it's going to become one of those classic comedies that we put on these lists that we have. So
I think so. Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, you know, we're going to wrap it up now, I think. Next week we're going to talk Godzilla.
Okay.
Got to talk Godzilla next week.
We're going to spoilery
and spoil the mess out of it. And I think we're going to have a guest. We're going to start bringing in some guests to this podcast, because that's what you have to do, right? You got to bring in guests. Hopefully, we're going to have some filmmakers on over the summer as well. Hopefully, there'll be filmmakers that actually have movies coming out this summer. That would be fun to talk to them.
Yep.
And we'll see. But, you know, thank you for listening. And please subscribe. We're going to be on iTunes soon, but we're going to post the links and stuff like that. And, you know, if you're looking to just geek out on summer movies, this is the podcast to listen to. We'll be running through August, late August, and we're talking about them all.
And if there's things you want us to talk about too, or have questions, hit us up on Twitter. We're both on Twitter, at Eric Davis, at Sean_O'Connell. We'll put that in the links to the stories, and just hit us up. We're always on.
Hit us up, yo. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the inaugural kind of episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. His name is Sean O'Connell. Enjoy your summer weekend at the movies.